It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Never read the comments coming up at 5:30. Top headlines of the day at 6 o'clock. But right now it is time for Not My Beat.
From the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Time for our weekly hit with Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team. Dan, what's up, dude? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. So I wanted to start a little bit broader with you and then circle back into the Commander stuff, and then maybe we'll see how much time we have left for everything else around the league. But all the rookie quarterbacks struggled in varying forms over the week one weekend. Obviously, Caleb threw for under 100 yards. Bo Nix had a very bizarre day. And then Jaden actually wins rookie of the week today, but does it in a way where he struggles some in the passing game, kind of bails himself out with the legs, which is awesome to see the scrambles and how effective he was, but certainly not the long-term strategy that he knows he's looking for, that the team is looking for. Were there any specific through lines that you saw from the rookie quarterbacks that you thought were particularly interesting in week one?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I kind of saw across the board through all three of them, and all three did kind of come with tough defenses, and I think that kind of ended up showing in some of the interior pressure that really got to these guys and really kind of made their jobs a little harder, kind of stopped them from having these clean pockets that they probably, you know, would have liked to work with. Obviously, when you look at like Caleb Williams, the two interior defenders in Tennessee, Jeffrey Sims and Sweat there, they were just kind of running through the interior of the Bears offensive line. And that was kind of one of the concerns that you kind of had with the Bears heading into it, of how strong that interior line was going to be. The Broncos were kind of the same thing. They were going against a Mike McDonald defense that was, you know, showing all the crazy looks that he gave with Baltimore. A lot of, you know, simulated pressures where you have like six or seven guys on the line of scrimmage, but only four are coming. But you don't really know which four. And there were a whole bunch of plays where he was just at the line trying to figure out what the protection should be. And then, you know, you only get a four-man rush, but then there's still one free rusher. There was a lot of that in that game. And I think there was still kind of some of the same things with the Commanders, too. I think there was, you know, you go against a Todd Bowles defense that was blitzing a lot. So there was a lot of those kind of protection issues where you're trying to figure out as your first start as a rookie quarterback of where you should be doing some of these protections. And I think kind of all three of those guys struggled a little bit. Obviously, Jaden did have those scrambles, so we kind of ended up kind of getting through those a little better than the other two. But yeah, I think those kind of setting the protection, knowing where some of those were coming from and then being impacted by that interior pressure, I think that was something we saw with all the rookie quarterbacks in week one.
In terms of the game plan that Cliff Kingsbury put forward, we know it's going to evolve. That is the nature of every single offensive coordinator in the league. Very rarely you're going to get it right in week one, and if you do, defenses will adjust and it'll be wrong by week five. But what did you make of Cliff's plan in week one, and where do you think they start to tinker as they go into week two against the Giants?
Yeah, it was tough. I think it was one of those things where I think they did like expect a lot of blitzing to be coming from that defense. So I think with some of the concerns that we kind of talked about last week of how short this offense was in the passing game in the preseason, that kind of came up in week one. But I do think that was intentionally to kind of stop it from getting some of those pressures to be able to get home. And I think they were able to mitigate that a little bit. And then we did see when there was pressure, he was able to, Jaden Daniels was able to run a little bit. So I think we will see a little more of the downfield stuff open up a little more when you get to a team that's not going to be blitzing, you know, quite as much. The Giants, you know, they do have that interior pressure. Dexter Lawrence was incredible against Minnesota, but they're not going to be a team that's that's blitzing a lot with the change in their defensive coordinator. They were one of the they had one of the highest rates of just a four-man rush last week. So I think we will see a little more, and it's a secondary that's definitely not as good. So I do think we'll see a little more pushing the ball downfield, kind of getting to where Jaden Daniels is a little more comfortable with some of those deeper throws. So I do think it was a little disappointing to see how short the offense was again in week one, but I do think as the season progresses, we will see some of more of that deep and intermediate passing kind of go. I just think it was a real tough test in week one.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, there's some shots that Jaden knows that he missed that were there and available. And
yeah,
throw those that A-dot all of a sudden rises pretty significantly. You throw a big number in there. That's how averages work. I don't know a lot about math, Dan, but I do know that. Dan Pizzuta, writer for the 33rd team, is with us here on the Hoffman Show. I think the bigger surprise, Dan, for obviously most of us, was that the defense was as porous as it was, giving up 37 points. And while it wasn't the same as last year, it felt the same as last year in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. What did you see on defense that maybe gives you concern, or anything that gives you hope moving forward that it's like, hey, those are the kind of mistakes maybe you expect in week one. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but perhaps, for example, like these are week one type of mistakes. They'll get it fixed. What did you see from Joe Witt Jr.'s first game as a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think Tampa Bay was just really prepared for what they thought Washington was going to be throwing out, and they did just kind of an excellent job of kind of using some of the rules and the things they thought the coverage they were going to see against them. You know, Tampa Bay was just using a lot of kind of motions to get in, you know, some like trips kind of bunches, and then using the route combinations to get all of these outbreakers that Baker Mayfield does like to throw. And that's where, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, that's where they were really thriving in some of those. So I think they were just kind of using their leverage to kind of find the space in some of the zone coverage that Washington was using. And I think Washington used, you know, one of the highest rates of zone coverage in the league. They were playing a whole bunch of just cover two and cover three. And when you're just kind of that static on defense and not throwing as many different looks as, you know, maybe even we saw during you know, Dan Quinn's time in Dallas, I think we did see, you know, it was cover two, but it was dressed up in different ways. And I don't think it was quite that in week one. So I think, you know, it'll still evolve a little bit, I think, as they figure out how to use some of these defensive players and kind of get a little more exotic in some of those coverage looks. But it was just one of those things where it was a bit static in coverage. I think Tampa Bay really knew what they were going to be able to get away with, and then they just kind of spammed that for as much as they could, and Washington didn't really adjust.
Yeah, to me, it was just a game where the defense felt incredibly young, and Tampa did a great job of taking advantage of it, and hats off to them. And, you know, this defense, like, will it get older as the year goes? Yes, because that is how time works. But they're going to have to figure out how to, as you said, dress it up. Or perhaps, Dan, or add some new pieces. Dan Pizzuta is with us from the 33rd team, and on the 33rd team, you wrote an article about free agents NFL teams should sign. You had a wide receiver written down for the Commanders. I will circle back to why you think Jamal Agnew could be a multi-purpose weapon for Washington in a second. However, with the Emmanuel Forbes news 2 hours ago at this point, what corners are available that could potentially be fits in Dan Quinn's system? And could perhaps J.C. Jackson, who you have here, is a good fit in Jacksonville? Like, would he be the guy that you would put at the top of that list for Washington? Or is there someone else on the list that you would think is a better fit if they want to go make a move?
Yeah, I mean, this was a tough article to write because there is not a great amount of, you know, free agents available. Obviously, you don't really have, you know, a lot of star players, you know, sitting around after week one. J.C. Jackson would be interesting because he does have the aggression that kind of you saw with, you know, Trayvon Diggs and Jerome Bland a little bit, but he is very, you know, hit or miss in terms of some of his coverage. So that might be kind of the boom or bust. I'm not sure if that's something that they're looking for right now. It's tough. I mean, when you're looking at corners, there's Xavien Howard's still out there, but again, like, he wasn't that great. It's a tough place for them to be sitting in. Jalen Mills maybe is a guy that might kind of have some of that versatility. He's kind of an older guy. It's tough. I don't think there's anyone who's going to come in and be an immediate upgrade, which is kind of, you know, one of those things where you should go into the season kind of being hopefully as deep as you can at some of these positions, because it is a tough thing to fill in even just after week one.
So we're saying, Dan, that the time to build a roster isn't September. That is the thing that I've been trying to get across to people. It's like, I just go sign someone. I'm like, who? It's September.
Yeah.
It's just not how the league works. That said, you did decide to write the article, so now I get to ask you about it. Why do you think Jamal Agnew could be – like, you didn't do one for every team here. You specifically picked the Commanders as one of the four or five teams you identified, and you picked Jamal Agnew as the player. Why did that stick out as a potential fit for you?
Yeah, when I was kind of going into this article, it was just kind of finding players who I think would be interesting and filling in some weaknesses. And I think, you know, Washington is not right now the deepest at wide receiver, and Jamal Agnew is not a great wide receiver, but I think he can be a useful piece, especially in the way Cliff Kingsbury does like to, you know, run his offense. And Agnew has experience in the slot and outside. He can be that short A dot, you know, type of player to kind of run in some of those, you know, slot routes and over the middle. I think that could be some of those gadget plays. I think he could be, you know, Rondale Moore never like fully worked out in Arizona, but if that is, you know, the type of role that Agnew could fill, I think that is potentially something. And he's been a very good kick returner during his career. And, Washington only had two kick returns. Both were done by Austin Eckler, and they were fine. But I think if you get someone who might be a little more experienced in there, that can help boost that a little bit if we do see that kick return rate jump up a little bit. So I just think he's, you know, this type of guy that he was going to be a cheap, just kind of be one of those, you know, super utility type players. And I think those are kind of the type of players that could help Washington a little bit out at this point in the season.
It's so interesting that you say that, because in camp, they definitely wanted Kaz Allen, the UDFA that was brought in last year from UCLA, to take that role. And they had moved him to running back. They were trying to get it to pop, and then he fumbled in the preseason game, and he just wasn't that guy. So to me, it's pretty clear that they want that body type. They want that skill set. And if Agnew could be that guy, like that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think so. And it just kind of looked like Austin Eckler wasn't really the most explosive option back there. Just kind of quickly, you know, looking at the returns that when I was, you know, watching them this week. So it's just one of those things where it's not going to be, you know, a huge difference, I think. And I still think we're going to see, you know, a tremendous amount of touchbacks with this kickoff, just because of where the starting field position is going to be and some of the longer returns we did see. I think teams will be just a little more aggressive in kicking into the end zone. So it might not even be like that big of a deal, but I do think that type of guy is someone who, you know, Washington could definitely use.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too on I'd rather give up the 35-yard line than an explosive play. And so I don't even know that the average is going to wind up being – like, touchback might be worse than average, but if you're telling me there's a chance to give up an explosive in a league that is completely designed to not give up explosives, it would make sense that you just take the touchback and go from there. Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Tonight, Thursday Night Football, Dan, you got Bills, Dolphins. They both won in Week 1. It was probably a tougher sledding than either of them wanted in Week 1. How do you feel about each of these two teams? We can go with the Bills first, coming out of their Week 1 performance on the quick turnaround into Week 2.
Yeah, I was really encouraged by the Bills' offense. And I think one of the kind of questions we had is, you know, you get rid of Stephon Diggs, what exactly is this passing offense going to look like? And it was in a way kind of the, you know, Patrick Mahomes, I'd say more, you know, 2022 than 2023, but Josh Allen was, you know, getting the ball out quickly. It was distributed to a wide range of those wide receivers, which I think is the best case scenario. And then when Josh Allen like needed to go hero mode with some of those scrambles, that was still in his bag. So it was very deliberate in the way they were getting the ball out. It was a shorter A dot, but I think that definitely worked to some of the strengths of what they were doing compared compounded with a run game that I think, you know, worked and should continue to work throughout the season. So there was a very concerted effort to just get the ball out quickly. It was, you know, one of his lowest time to throws in his career. And I think that's something that they can kind of build upon as they kind of figure out many different ways to win, which is a really cool thing about this bubble offense. And then you had, you know, the deep shot to Keon Coleman. So I think that's just going to continue to evolve. The defense was a little, you know, up and down, which I think, again, was also working with some new pieces. And I think just Arizona's offense, I think, is going to be decent this year. I think Kyler Murray was doing some good things, and so much of that Buffalo defense was kind of focused on not letting Marvin Harrison Jr. do anything, and they succeeded in that, but that did leave some options for Murray and some of the other, you know, run game options to be running on them a little bit. So I think the Bills defense will continue to improve a little bit, but if this offense has already kind of figured out one way to win, they'll continue to improve. I think that's going to be a very good thing for the Bills going forward.
And then for the Dolphins, like, I just don't know what to make of week one for them. They pull it out.
Yeah.
But because of the Tyreek incident before the game, I just can't imagine the headspace they were in for that one. How much stock do you put into their week one performance? And then, like, this is kind of the fun part about small sample sizes is we're going to have 2 weeks worth of Dolphins where after one game, their best player got arrested beforehand and went through a fairly traumatic experience with the police, and another player got arrested and another player was in on the scene. And then it's Thursday Night Football, and Thursday Night Football is not real NFL football because you only have 4 days to game plan. So, like, what do we even, like, no matter what happens tonight, do we know anything about the Dolphins after 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think that kind of will depend on what this offense does look like in this game. I think one of the interesting things that I did kind of come away with, or really didn't come away with, is there wasn't a new wrinkle that Miami showed in week one, whether they just didn't get the opportunity or they didn't really have it because they were down early in that game and then kind of had to come back. Well, I think what we've seen from, you know, Mike McDaniel's offense, it was great in that first season. Then it came out in the beginning of last season. We saw all of these new wrinkles, some of the new the passing and the motions and the outside run game that they had. There was not really a change up in what we saw in 2024 now. So I'm wondering if they're still sitting on some things that could kind of change this offense a little bit. I know Mostert is going to be out, so that takes away some of the run game, but I do believe Achane is supposed to play. So that definitely will be helpful. He was very involved in the passing game for that, which I think was a little new, but it was still a lot of, you know, screens and things like that. So it wasn't as much of the downfield. And I think the Jacksonville defense is going to be very good. You know, Tyson Campbell being out now is definitely going to be a bummer for them, but they played the highest rate of man coverage by a wide margin. They were pressing at the line of scrimmage. So I think they were a tough defense for the Dolphins to play in week one. So I'm very interested to just kind of see how this Miami offense is going to evolve, because when they needed to get some of those big plays, they had a big play to Jalen Waddle. They had the 80-yard touchdown to Tyreek Hill. So they were able to pull those out, but it wasn't a very successful game for Miami. I think it was the third lowest success rate Tua has had in the Mike McDaniel era. So that was a very interesting kind of, you know, juxtaposition there between them being able to pull out. But overall, it was not really the Miami offense that we've seen early in the past couple seasons.
Bills, Dolphins tonight on Thursday Night Football. It'll be here on the Team 980 at 8 o'clock after Terp Talks with Coach Locks. Dan, appreciate the time, sir. Thank you kindly, and we will talk to you next Thursday. Great stuff again.
All right, sounds good.
That is Dan Pizzuto with us every Thursday here on the Team 980 from the 33rd Team. And Anthony, before I forget, as we bid Dan adieu, and we're talking about Thursday Night Football, should we pick Thursday Night Football so we don't forget at the end of the show? Are we going to remember at the end of the show?
I'm going to remember.
Are you sure? I'm not going to have to text you at watching, because I don't know that I'm watching tonight, because we're in Indy and I don't know what we're doing.
I will be watching tonight.
I don't know where I'm going to be. Okay, so if all of a sudden we forget, because that's what happened last week, is last week we extra messed up because we were supposed to do our Super Bowl picks at the end of the show, and then we messed that up. But I got it in before, the second drive of the game. So I was like, I got Chiefs tonight. I got Chiefs to win it all, and then I just don't want to forget tonight. Is basically the moral of this story.
I got you, big dog.
Okay. Again, Thursday Night Football tonight here on the Team 980. Terps Talk with Coach Locks coming up at 7 following us. When we get back, oh boy, it's Never Read the Comments. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, which is, let's call it pertinent to this segment, Anthony, because I do believe it's about that time, 5:30 on a Thursday. They told us not to, but...
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read... those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, so we chopped the show up into digestible pieces for you. If you can't catch the whole thing live, all 3 hours streaming at the Team 980. Or perhaps even you're driving around listening to something on the radio. You want to go find it on YouTube because you couldn't call in at the time and you want to get your comment in. I don't know how everybody gets their comments in, but the point is, y'all leave comments on our YouTube page, at Craig Hoffman, at the Team 980, and then we respond to them here on the radio. One of the big, most commented on pieces, segments that we've done of radio over the past week is on Jaden Daniels and whether or not he scrambled too much in his debut against the Bucks. I actually thought this was a good comment from Sean Adams. I would say mad about the right things, not mad about the wrong things, and some perspective. Sean says, short answer, yes. Long answer, he did what needed to be done to keep several drives alive. Number one, if they do not send him to the Nationals to learn how to slide one day each week, what are they doing? We have an MLB team right here. Learn how to slide so we can keep him for a while. Number two, if that equipment manager doesn't super glue that damn helmet on, zero excuse for it popping off like that. Number three, he will get more comfortable when the game slows down for him, especially in the passing game. He had some open receivers and just either didn't see them or missed them. The final thing I will say is that despite the shortcomings, he still performed the best out of the top three rookie QBs in week one. Let's hope he continues his growth and has a great game against the Giants. Anthony, Sean, if I'm out, you get to host the show. We got to keep the helmet on. I'm not as upset about the sliding thing, but it's okay. Perspective on, hey, you know, he did the best he could, but he's got to get better. That's not what most YouTube comments are. That was good. It had perspective. Good job, Sean.
We love those kinds of thoughtful responses or just comments in general. Are there any more?
No, not many. Not many. I thought it was a good to start the segment that way.
Okay. On a high note. Okay.
Yeah, we want to you got to have carrots and sticks.
Yes.
Right? We got to reward the good behavior. Hey, Sean was passionate. He had thoughtfulness. He addressed a couple of different things, but like he was generally on topic.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's done. Now let's get to all the people that we're giving attention because they're Looney Tunes.
Uh-oh.
Not all of them are Looney Tunes. We were talking about, obviously, all aspects of the game on the Take Command film review. So we got a bunch of comments on that. Jamel James, 4835, says, my biggest problem is that BSJ is just as bad as Forbes, but Forbes is in his second year. BSJ has looked like... Anthony, this is pretty funny. He used a donkey emoji because he thinks he's looked like booty.
That's actually funny.
That's actually really funny. He's looked bad for years, but all the attention is going to Forbes. Jamel, I don't think that's correct. I think plenty of people, including you, are complaining about Benjamin St. Juice. I think the difference is, like, when Forbes was getting beat, he was like not in the picture. He was committing penalties because he's not trusting the technique. Like, Benjamin St. Juice has been on the wrong end of a lot of dudes making plays where he is like, he could also be the one to make the play. So I don't want to fully exonerate him and say, because I feel like sometimes we, and I will fully own we here, as I'm someone who has said this before, will be like, oh, there's nothing else he could have done. Just, you got to tip your hat to the other guy. And it's like, no, I mean, he could have made a play. The other guy made a play on him. He was generally in the right position, where often that ball falls incomplete because it's too difficult of a play to make for the other guy. But like, if the other guy's Mike Evans, that's going to be really hard because that guy's going to make that play. And so you then have to up his make a play by making a play yourself. So I do think that it's worth saying that. Whereas Forbes, it's like wrong leverage, wrong technique, wasn't in the right spot, didn't give himself a chance to make a play, where BSJ is in the right spot and has to make one. So they're different. And I think the way those guys have, I presume by the way coaches talk about them, like paid attention in meetings or practiced or, you know, been generally as professionals, it seems like there's some sort of chasm there. Maybe it's a small sliver and it's a significant but small, and maybe it's a huge difference, but I do think that's important to point out. With that said, both of them have to play better in the long run, or they're both going to get replaced as soon as this offseason. Obviously, things complicated now by the Forbes injury that came out today, or that he's going to have surgery today. But I do think you know, they have results-wise been similarly poor, but the reasons why are different, and the reasons why point to how easy or not it will be to ultimately get it corrected in the long term. On our Tell the Truth Monday segment, let's see, who was this that commented? Jack Tupp, 4358. Sup, Jack? Jack says, the truth, and Tell the Truth Monday, is Jonathan Allen and Terry McLaurin are blue chip players. And like so many other blue chip players on this team before them, their talent was wasted by terrible coaches and horrible schemes, or meddling by a terrible owner. We've been in a rebuild for over two decades. The majority of that was under the worst owner, certainly in franchise history, but maybe even NFL history. Game one of year one under the completely new owners and coaches just isn't going to tell us much of anything. Anthony, I've made a grave mistake here. I've included two good comments and never read the comments this week.
There it is.
I'm going to start thinking that reading the comments is a good idea.
It might just be.
No, it's not. Do not. What are you trying to do? Destroy me? Oh, yeah, it is, Craig. Just spend all your time in there.
I mean, you were
for your mental health.
You were, you know, praising these guys for, you know, such great comments. Maybe we should spend
them. Maybe I've just done it. I've hit enough hide user on channel for some of the really bad ones that okay. I've just weeded out the bad ones. Maybe I've self-selected.
Yeah.
So if you can still leave a comment, congratulations. You've passed the test. But I think this is what I will say, and why I actually wanted to pick this out. It's not just I thought it was good perspective on like, hey, yes, it is okay to say this is game one of year one and we don't know anything yet. But Terry and John are not blue chip players, with all due respect to those guys who I think are awesome and I really, really like. To me, blue chip means you're top five at your position. And I don't think John has been top five. Like, I think there was like a year stretch where John might have been top five at his position. I think Deron is closer to top five, frankly, than John at this point. Maybe I would love nothing more than John Allen to be like, I'll show you and I'll show everybody. But it shouldn't have to come from hearing someone on the radio say it. I still think John's probably like top 10 of the position. It's not like he stinks. He's really good. He's an awesome football player. But are you consistently week in, week out top five at your position? And, you know, Terry is definitely not that, even if I think he could have a top five type season if you put him with, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, being more scheme proof and things like that are what make you that kind of guy. So both things can be true. I don't think we learn a lot about where this team is in week one. Certainly where they're going to go. We don't learn that a lot because week one is a gigantic crapshoot for everyone. It's more crapshooty if you have not been together as a team. I think they probably enhanced their own or dehanced their own performance, if you will, by not playing a whole lot in the preseason. So there's a lot of different factors, but we also should just be realistic about this roster, that the best players on it are exceptional football players, but there is just a different level that those top five guys are on. And I don't think that we've had a top five player at their position in Washington not named Trent Williams or Tress Way, who's a punter, in a long time. Certainly not multiples at once. I guess you could have argued maybe there was a year of crossover where Trent and Sheriff together both were top five. Like, was Sheriff a top five guard at the same time Trent was a top five tackle? I don't know that Brandon ever quite got there. He's certainly one of the best. He and Trent were really, really good and part of some good O-lines. But outside of those two, like, even Ryan Kerrigan. Like, Ryan Kerrigan was awesome. Now Ryan Kerrigan's catching strays. Sorry, Ryan. Like, Ryan Kerrigan was awesome. Double-digit sack guy, super consistent, professional as all hell. He wasn't one of the best five pass rushers in the NFL, one of the best five edges in the NFL. Like, he wasn't Von Miller in the time that Von was that guy. You know, he's not what Myles Garrett and Michael Parsons are now. 11-sack guy is very different than 14-sack guy. So I just think that we have to be realistic about the difference in greatness from a truly great red chip, if you will, let's say somewhere between 6 and 20, depending on the position. Obviously, like, tackles, there's two on every team that start. Wide receivers, you're going to have a little bit more depth, etc. And a true blue chip like Justin Jefferson, Chris Jones, what Aaron Donald was his entire career. There's just a different level there. And I don't, outside of Tress at punter, who I think has been one of the best five punters in the NFL for a long time, and when Trent Williams is the best tackle in the, or one of the five best tackles in the league, guys like Joe Thomas were still in the league then, but certainly one of the best five. Anthony, I don't even know if most people remember what that looks like.
I would make the argument for Sam Cosmi right now at right guard, but that's about it.
You know, he's probably the closest. I don't know that.
I was looking
to
at
me, like, a blue chip guy is pretty unanimous, and yeah. There's a nut, like, when Fowler did the ESPN survey and he didn't make the top 10, I was like, whoa, because he's definitely in some people's top fives. And I do think he's slept on. But, like, if execs around the league aren't saying his name enough that he doesn't crack that top 10,
yeah.
I think they're wrong. But, like, the point would be that it's a no-brainer. Like, Aaron Donald was never left off that list.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a chance by the end of the season that Cosmi is there, and then he starts to, you know, he just got paid, he gets some more recognition. Sometimes the recognition comes after the reality in terms of if you were to watch every guard in the league and grade it out. But I also don't think he's been so thoroughly dominant that he is a no-brainer. But he's probably the best. He's probably, outside of Alan Payne and McLaurin, the guy who has the best case on this team, and certainly is the guy that has the best chance to elevate to that based off his age and career trajectory.
For sure.
All right, continuing on, never read the comments here on the Hoffman Show. We got, did I put another one? Man, I put a lot of good comments in on this week. Mr. Swervon, frequent commenter. People will say they didn't do enough, but can't even give a logical take. I'm talking about the offseason here. People will say they didn't do enough, but can't give a logical take on who they would or should have or could have gotten in free agency. A lot of our fans want to spend money just to spend money. Building a team means nothing to them. They think it's Madden and everything just gels. Philly had a roster already. Texans took 3 years. Lions took 3 years. And Giants, along with us, played a very easy schedule. We all could have made the playoffs that year. Talking about when, you know, the Giants made the playoffs in year one with Shane and Dable. The caller had referenced that specifically in the segment that he was commenting on. Yes. That is correct. Like, everyone wants to pretend like the Houston Texans were built in a year. No, the Houston Texans were built over the course of multiple years. In the third year, second year, depending on when you want to give the start date of the rebuild, they fired their coach and drafted not just one, but two players in the top five because they decided that they were ready to launch. And they got in that one of those picks, CJ Stroud, who was the most pro-ready quarterback that's apparently come out in a long, long time. Something they were right about, more right than anybody or than a lot of other teams, including the Carolina Panthers, who had a chance to take him and didn't. They took Bryce Young instead. But, like, they were right. But they had built an infrastructure. They had guys like Laremy Tunsil. Talk about top five tackles. Like, Laremy Tunsil is a blue-chip player. So they already had that guy in place. They had some guys defensively that were really good, and then they obviously bring in D'Amico, and you know they've been building towards a certain style, and voila, they do it. Teams like the Lions took multiple years. The Lions stunk Dan Campbell's first year. Everyone was laughing at him because he's talking about eating kneecaps, and they weren't very good. And then all of a sudden, I think it was back half of his second year, they were one of the best teams in football coming down the stretch. They knock Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs in his final game in Green Bay. And then next, they just continue that hot streak through last season. And now here they are starting 1-0, one of the favorites once again. And so you think about some of the teams that have early success and on rebuilds, and the reality is you probably just weren't paying attention to the first couple of years of their rebuilds. You're much more likely to have a Lions or even like the 49ers, right, which is the model here because, well, Adam Peters is a part of it. Like, they weren't that good in 2017, but they had guys like what's his name, Logan Paulson, who came in. And Logan helped set the foundation and be like, this is what it means to be a pro. George Kittle, young tight end who's been brought in. And man, this kid looks pretty good. And a guy like Logan helped make sure that they got the absolute best out of George Kittle. And look what's happened to George Kittle. Not that Logan deserves any significant credit for that, but I'm sure George would give Logan some sort of credit for being like, oh, I saw how that guy came to work every day. And also, they probably knew that was within George Kittle because they scout really well. And so it took a while, and they had some missteps along the way in terms of, you know, they messed up the Trey Lance thing and other things that they got right and wrong along the way. But if you take the time and build it right, not only are you having a chance to be really good, but you have some resiliency. Like, San Francisco messed up the Trey Lance thing and still has been to multiple Super Bowls. That's really hard to do. Not just miss on a top five pick, but trade up for that pick, give up assets, and still have the resiliency, still do well enough in your scouting in other places, still have the schematic advantage because Kyle Shanahan's really good at his job to overcome that. Like, that's big time stuff. And so if that's the model, yeah, it might take a couple of years. It didn't take forever in San Francisco, but it's definitely going to take a couple. And by the way, that San Francisco team had some pieces that were left over from the previous iteration of them being good that helped them launch a little bit faster than the Washington Commanders, who tore down their entire roster, basically had very few players, and all the players that remained had barely ever been on a winning team in the NFL. So, starting about 6 feet under, if you ask me, on this whole rebuild thing, having to fill in some gaps and then build, like, you got to almost build a foundation underneath the foundation. That's kind of what is happening right now. Then there's the Emmanuel Forbes thing, which we obviously talked about earlier in the week. Anthony, I feel like we should still do the Forbes comments, even though this is the everything has changed because of the injury, but they were interesting. Yep. Go ahead and do these. Okay, mm-hmm. Anthony in his green shirt is giving me the green light. What shirt you got on there?
That's my middle school. WJA. Oh. There it is, baby.
There you go. Okay. I'm just wondering. Anthony's a big polo guy. Anyway, Emmanuel Forbes, he plays cornerback for the Commanders, and he did not play particularly well on Sunday. And the comments had things to say. Jimmy Z 2098, Forbes absolutely sucks. Get rid of him now. This guy will never be an NFL starting cornerback. He can't cover anybody decent. I think you meant decently. You can't really fix that. Sure, with time, he might get a little better. So it'll go from horrible to just really bad. And the reason I identified that comment is because it's literally back to back with this one from Joshua BO2N. Says Darius Slay played so bad his rookie year he was benched. Lots of other examples like that in the league. Yeah. Patience. It's something that is in short supply in the universe. It is something that is in short supply in the NFL. But having some can pay off. And again, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are trained professionals designed to know whether patience is worth having. We're all going to have patience now with this injury. But, you know, then you got comments like this. L. Yonel, wait a second. I didn't read this screen name beforehand. L. Yonel, do we think this is a Linnell Willingham pseudonym?
I'm not going to lie. I thought that's what you were getting at.
L. Yonel?
Yonel, yeah.
We're on to you. Come on, Willingham. You got to be more creative than that. If you're going to have burner accounts, Let's at least make them good. I don't think it's Linnell. Anyway, L. Yonel 6524 says, I'm so tired of hearing all the excuses for Forbes. Everybody wants to blame Jack Del Rio as if he couldn't develop him. Well, what's the excuse going to be if he does this all year? Dude tried to jump for an interception. He could have easily batted the ball down. Either way, he'll never be a shutdown corner, more like a gamble corner like D-Hall, and that's it. His confidence is gone. You can see it in his play, not what he says. Don't invite Fred Smoot to any more draft days because homeboy is dookie. We got D-Hall catching strays. We got Fred Smoot catching strays. And we got Emmanuel Forbes just catching whatever the heck that was.
God dang.
And he said the word dookie.
I have no words.
I could see that, which makes for great radio, let me tell you. I don't think anyone's making... It's not excuses. Like, there's reasons. He's poorly coached. It's really hard. And if he can't figure it out with multiple coaches, then multiple things can be true. Jack Del Rio could have been a bad defensive coordinator by the end of his time in Washington. Defensive backs coaches here could have been bad. And also, Emmanuel Forbes might also be bad. They clearly weren't good at picking talent the last regime. So multiple things might be true at once. It's not excuses. It's just that's life, especially life in the NFL. It's hard. If everyone was great at drafting, nobody would miss. And we know that the miss rate in the NFL draft is really, really high. But then you get comments like this from WhamBam21. Wham! Last year counts. The film is the film. And I responded, Anthony, by going, counts means what? Film is the film, but it requires context. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. And this comment legitimately cracked me up because this is peak internet take right here. Ready for this one? No other team or any coach on this staff, for that matter, is going to say, well, last year didn't count because Ron Rivera was the coach. He's been extremely bad in man-to-man situations and as a tackler. Bad coaching or not, he's the player and that's his film. The only reason you're giving him a two-game leash is because you're going off last year partly. Here's the problem with WhamBam21 comment that no other team or any coach on this staff was going to say last year didn't count and give Emmanuel Forbes a chance. The people in charge are giving him a chance. You are literally factually wrong on the very substance basis that you are basing your very silly internet take on. That, no one else would give him a chance. Everyone else in the league would have done the same exact thing this team did, which is say, he's a first-round pick, he's under contract, let's see what we can do. And they're going to continue to develop him. And that is a thing that is really hard for players when they're in the spotlight to admit, like, hey, I'm being developed right now. I'm more of a project. No player is ever going to say it. No coach is ever going to say it, especially one that's getting reps in real time. But the idea that no one else would do this, no one would give him a chance when he's literally getting one, now obviously sidetracked by injury, it really undercuts the argument when that's just literally not the facts on the ground. Right in front of our faces. Okay, funny ones to end it, Anthony. On your continued Josh Allen take, where you think he's overrated, he's not in your top five.
Yep.
George Garnavos says, no offense, I mean this as nicely as possible. If Allen isn't your top four, you are smoking crack. To which I responded, wow. That escalated quickly.
That did escalate really quickly. No matter what
I think it's the part where you say you're not smoking crack, Anthony.
Well, that too.
Anthony,
yes, I don't do
for
that.
For the record, Anthony is not smoking crack.
No, I'm not. Josh Allen is still
completely sober.
Not in my top five.
Okay, just a very sober.
Just mine. Just mine, though. Just mine.
And then Trell Riddick says, Michael Phillips, on our hit with Phillips from Monday, Michael Phillips is just trying to feed us BS, LOL, be a realist, man. But he spelled realist, R-E-A-L-E-S-T. As in, like, yo, that dude is the realist.
The realist.
Not as in, like, stop being in fantasy land, be a realist.
Yeah.
So, of course, I responded, Michael Phillips is the realist. Look it up.
With the EST, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like,
Because they meant
look,
the
look
IST.
Look up what you got, but because you already know Michael Phillips.
Yeah.
Clearly is the realist. And by the way, that's the first time that's ever been said about Michael Phillips.
Oh, wow.
All right, when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, top Anthony's still, yeah, you caught some strays on the internet this 2 week, buddy. When we get back, our top headlines of the day from Command Land, Joe Witt Jr. and Cliff Kingsbury spoke, plus the major injury that is changing the course of the Commander season. We talk about it all in our pick six at six here on the Team 980.